B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy who will grant you a mulligan, but then remind you about it the whole ride home. Ask me how I know. Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. This week, the 101st PGA Championship is being contested on a monster of a golf course, the Black Course at Bethpage State Park in suburban New York City. We'll set the stage from the site with our man from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, Ron Green Jr. Speak with a four-time participant in the PGA as a teaching professional, Pinehurst Golf Academy's Kelly Mitchum, and we'll handicap the field with golf journalist Ron Mintz, but we begin with Ron Green Jr. Well, Ron, before we get started talking about the PGA, we need to talk about that. No one does culture of where they are better than Ron Green Jr. Have we gone to any shows? We're in New York City. What have we done culturally while we're there?
Well, my wife and daughter came up with me last weekend, so flew up on Friday, had a fantastic Italian dinner in the city, right in the middle of everything with
nice.
My brother and his family, and then double dipped on the plays on Saturday. Had only planned to go to one, but daughters being daughters convinced us to go see Mean Girls, which made I was probably one of the 50 men in the 800 people there. But thoroughly enjoyed it. But the highlight of the whole thing was seeing Jeff Danielson To Kill a Mockingbird on Saturday night, which just, I mean, I've been lucky enough to see Hamilton and, you know, Les Mis and all that. It's as good as anything I've ever seen.
I have heard it's spectacular. Didn't Aaron Sorkin do the rewrite on that?
He did, yeah. And it's just, you know, it's after seeing a big, you know, brassy musical with all the singing and dancing and the lights and sound and all that stuff, it's just, you know, these people out there doing the, you know, just telling this story on sort of a plain, almost simple thing set. I mean, but it's just, you know, the story, it's updated a little bit. But it's still To Kill a Mockingbird. It just, you know, it'll put a lump in your throat, but it was terrific.
There you go. No one does culture, no matter where he is, like Ron Green Jr. All right, let's get to the 101st PGA Championship. Are you staying warm? Looks a little little cold, a little damp in New York this time of year.
Monday was the kind of day where they might have question whether to play football in it. It was so nasty. It was just cold, and I mean, you needed a fireplace is what you needed. And it's gotten better over the course of the week. I mean, it's you know, it could just have easily have been, you know, sunny and 75 to 80 degrees, but caught a wet start to the week. Golf course is drying out, and now you know, beautiful weather. I mean, it's funny, everybody talks about what the move to May means in so many particular areas, but in particular with the weather. And so, yeah, they called a chilly one here, but, you know, next year they're going to be at Harding Park in San Francisco, where you think weather wouldn't be a huge issue, but they've had a giant rain event out there. So maybe better off being here than had they been out there, because they might not even have gotten started on time there.
Well, and if you're chilly in New York, what was it Twain said? The coldest winter I ever spent was my summer in San Francisco.
I'm sure we'll get a nice June gloom, gray, chilly U.S. Open out there before too long at Pebble Beach.
Well, and let's stay on the subject of PGA locations. All of these organizations like to work well in advance and looking ahead there at Kiawa in 2021. But then we really get crazy. We go back up to New Jersey for Trump National. Then we go to Oak Hill. Those are two back-to-back years in 2022, and especially Oak Hill. It could be really, really cold in May. Is there a chance that the PGA rethinks some of these locales?
I would doubt it. It's going to be interesting. Next week, the senior PGA is at Oak Hill. So it's sort of a trial run. Now, granted, it was snowing not far from where we are at Bethpage on Monday afternoon. So, you know, that's extreme. But, you know, I heard somebody say, I put my skis away, and I had buddies call saying they were going skiing today. But, again, you know, it's sort of the scenario they would, you know, worry about. you know, Kerry Hake, who sets up the golf course, was talking about how you just kept waiting and waiting for springtime. Right, they had a 3.5 to 4 week growing season. You know, the rough was really spotty and thin in some spots for a while. It has since more than caught up in most places. Lucas Glover said, you know, you're going to hit it in some spots and you have no chance, but other spots you hit it and say, hey, that's not too bad. So it's maybe as consistent as they would like it to be, but, you know, the golf course, given the rain and then and everything else, the greens are spectacular to a player. They're raving about how you're using the word immaculate for the putting surfaces. And, you know, these greens here, the challenge is not so much the greens at Bethpage Black, it's getting on the greens. Once you get there, and they have some slope, they're not like Augusta National or some other places where we've got all these crazy slopes and the speed and all that. So it's, you know, it is a brute of a golf course. As Seth Wall, the CEO of the PGA, called it this week, he goes, it's tackle football out there.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest, taking that aim. Thank you for bringing up Kerry Hague. I was concerned that they didn't have a growing season in New York up to this point. Apparently, there's God in Kerry Hague when it comes to growing grass, because they didn't just have a growing season at Bethpage. That's lush, man. That, I mean, it almost looks like they could hold a U.S. Open there tomorrow. It is nasty in that rough. And to a player, I don't think I've heard anybody say they're going to chance anything longer than an 8 iron trying to get a ball out of there.
Yeah, I think if you get lucky, you can get in some spots where you can do a little more with it. But yeah, players talk about this golf course being built around the approach shots, and an iron player, you've got to be an exceptional iron player here. But now, because you have a little room to drive it, but now with the rough being wet in particular, we all know what it's like when you've got a tangle of grass, but then you throw all that water on it, it makes it more difficult. And so I think one benefit or one little aid is the fairways being damp and muddy. The ball, they play wider than they actually are. I mean, they're still pretty wide, but you get a little less roll, so maybe that protects players a little bit. The trade-off to that is then you're suddenly hitting more club into greens, and it's already got what – I think they've only got two par fours under 400 yards. They got two of them over 500 yards. The two par fives are over 600 yards. The par threes, all but one, are over 200 yards. I mean, it's 7,450 yards or so, and plays longer than that.
Yeah, it's a big ballpark. I've heard that term more than once this week. And, you know, look, Tiger Woods is not the long ball hitter that he was back in 02, but I think he was describing the seventh hole where he would go 3-wood, 7-iron, and he said in his practice rounds he hit all-out driver, all-out 5-wood, and then tried all-out 3-wood and was short on that. That's stunning to me when guys who can really hit the ball a long way are going, this is a big place.
Yeah, we marvel at how far they hit the ball and how they shorten everything. It's hard to shorten this given the setup and the conditions. It's just, you know, we see so many times on telecasts and at tournaments, you watch them hit tee shots and the ball just like it's been put on a trampoline takes off and they get their fly distance and they get another 40, 50 yards of run. We're not going to get that kind of run at this golf course. And so it just, I think it's a further advantage for the longer hitters. You know, distance is never a disadvantage if you can keep it fairly well in play. But in particular this week, I think the conditions combined with the golf course may eliminate more players than usual from the outset.
Well, and it could be a sloppy track all week. I know that there is rain expected on the weekend, and if that's the case, I don't think in my lifetime I've seen a better mudder than Rory McIlroy, whether it be at Congressional or at Valhalla, where he won a U.S. Open and a PGA. Both of those places were practically underwater. Is this the kind of golf course, especially since there's not a whole lot of slope in the greens, they're fairly flat once you get there, is this the kind of golf course that a Rory McIlroy could excel at?
I haven't seen a golf course Rory McIlroy can't excel at. Now, whether he does it or not, you know, Quail Hollow is a perfect example of course he has excelled at and seemed in position 2 weeks ago in Charlotte to win that tournament and then got nothing going on Sunday and admitted he sort of got in his own way there and created some problems and turned into a really flat finish. But yeah, this is a great place for Rory. I mean, when he won at Valhalla, when he won at Congressional, We've talked about those when we were on. One is Open Championship at Hoyt Lake. They were softer conditions on the golf course. So he gets that, has that here. But, you know, when he won those, he didn't have Brooks Koepka looking like the unbeatable golfer at times, which, you know, as this thing begins, you think Brooks, you know, for all the attention on Tiger, Brooks Koepka just rolls in like, okay, it's another major, and we sort of know what that means.
Thank you so much for bringing up Brooks Koepka. I was thinking about him a lot this week in that, you know, I think he has five total wins. Three of them are majors. Now, this is wild speculation, I know. But let's just say down the line that we're talking about a guy who has 12 or 13 wins and eight of them are majors. How do you look at that sort of career?
Well, I think we define majors. I mean, we define careers more by major championships than other things. I mean, Colin Montgomery won, what, the Order of Merit 8 years in a row or something, but didn't win a major championship. In fact, didn't even win a PGA Tour event. And that's sort of, you know, the mark against him. I mean, we look at guys like, you know, Dustin Johnson's won 20 times, but, hey, he's only won one major championship. You know, Koepka said in his pre-tournament press conference, he goes, he doesn't see why he couldn't win double-digit major championships. You know, his argument is they're easier to win than other tournaments because through his equation of taking, you know.
Which sounded just like Jack Nicklaus, by the way.
Very similar to Nicklaus. Yeah, when you take this many out and then you do this and do that, you got about 25 guys you got to beat. Sort of like, okay, well, that's, you know, now you're playing the Tour Championship instead of the PGA Championship in terms of players you got to beat. But, I mean, I just think he's on such a confidence high. I mean, who knows? I mean, things can happen. I mean, suddenly, you know, heaven forbid you get hurt or you can't get it close with a wedge or something, and suddenly the game starts to get harder. I mean, it's easy when, and because, you know, if golf can be easy, it is easy when he plays it. He simplifies it. He just boils it down to the essence. Hey, here I am. Here's the ball. There's where I'm trying to hit it. Go hit it. And, you know, it's amazing how, I'm sure there's more to it than that, but he makes it seem so uncomplicated. And I think when you get to these biggest events where there's so much noise, there's so much expectation, there's so much nuance thrown in, that, you know, he strips a lot of that away. I think Tiger's been able to do that through his years. I mean, he has supreme confidence, obviously, playing and just, you know, like, okay, I don't have to worry about all the other stuff. I just got to get it from here to there, then from there to here. And, you know, he believed he was going to do it, and he did it. And, you know, we've talked about it so much that self-belief, for all the other things, self-belief may be the biggest factor in who wins these tournaments.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. If you don't think you can win double-digit majors, then what are you even doing out there? Now, that being said, there's only three people that have done it in the history of golf, so, you know, it all remains to be seen. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. Before we get to the big striped cat in the room, I wanted to ask you about another player. I keep hearing over and over again from the golfers that the key to winning this golf tournament is not only hitting it straight, but hitting it long and straight. And when he is on his game, that just sounds like Dustin Johnson. This course and its dimensions, although it's going to play differently than Oakmont did, it's a big monster like Oakmont.
We've talked so much about the last few years, what he did in terms of changing his wedge game and making it so much sharper and stronger. And that will still be critical here because you're going to miss some fairways and you're going to have to hit wedges in to save pars once off. But I just think he's such a good driver with that little cut he hits. Now, he's hit the occasional pull left this year, you know, just ever so often that, you know, you don't want to hit that one here and suddenly get it in a spot where you make a double bogey because you're going to make bogeys and you can survive that, but you can't survive the double bogeys. And so I think, you know, if he can get it in play, I mean, it just I think there's a small group of guys that you sort of draw the circle around starting out, and he's right at the top of that list with Koepka, I mean, and Tiger, and for good and Rory for good reason. I mean, they all have this powerful game, and, you know, Dustin is pretty darn consistent off the tee, and that gets you, you know, a half a step ahead of the field right there at this golf course.
Thank you for bringing up Tiger Woods. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. I want you to think back to a year ago about this time and the way Tiger's body language and choice of words was like in a press conference as opposed to what you saw this week. Does Tiger's whole visage, the way he's carrying himself, is it reminiscent of the Tiger of old? Does it seem that this Masters win has sort of rekindled that spark of, yes, I am Tiger Woods and watch what I can do?
You know, I think to some degree, yes. And I think on the other side of it, the way players look at him, you know, we talked a lot about the young players. Boy, I wish I could have played against him in his prime. And, you know, be careful what you wish for. Look what they got at the Masters. So I think there's a lot of that. I think he is, you know, he talked this week about why he didn't come to Charlotte, why he just wasn't mentally ready to get back into the grind of it. But I think he, you know, nothing validates the work you do like success. I mean, and, you know, the Tour Championship was, you know, proved he could come back and win, and it was emotional and all that. But then doing what he did at Augusta, I mean, that was on a whole different level. That was, you know, that was the dream. I mean, you know, we were having this discussion the other night, nothing against this championship, but had Tiger gotten this one instead of the Masters as the first major back after all that, I'm not sure it would have been quite the same. I just think Augusta was – there's so much to Augusta that, you know, with Tiger and with all that comes with, you know, the golf course, the history, the green jacket, all that, that it made it just such an enormous thing. Now, I mean, would it surprise me if he just doesn't have it this week to the same level? Not really. I mean, I just think the expectations of just, you know – they're a Roman candle again, you know what I mean?
Right.
Suddenly he's Tiger. Well, he's going to win, or somebody's going to have to beat him. It's not that easy, and I think he knows that. He's not the player he was, whatever, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I mean, he's experience-wise, he knows how to do it as well or better than anybody, so he has that advantage. But, you know, he's got to get in and play, and if he doesn't, you know, we've seen him through the years, if that driver gets going a little bit off, I mean, suddenly he's back there chopping it out like everybody else.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And when we return, we'll meet a Class A teaching professional from the Pinehurst Golf Academy and 4-time participant in this major, Kelly Mitchum. He'll take dead aim at the 101st PGA Championship, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Kelly Mitchum was a big time amateur golfer and champion. More on that later. He's now a Class A teaching pro at Pinehurst Golf Academy and was a 4-time participant in the PGA Championship.
All right, Kelly, you're unique in that you have qualified as a teaching professional to play in the PGA Championship on 4 different occasions. And we'll cover those occasions individually momentarily. But first, I want to go through the process of actually getting into the tournament. So right now, just act like I don't know anything. You're a teaching professional. You're at the Pinehurst Golf Academy. You say, you know what? But I've got my PGA card. I want to try to play in the PGA. How do you do it?
All right. Well, we have a qualifier for it. And so our National Club Pro, it's also called the Professional National Championship. So it's competing against other club pros around the country. The top 20 qualify for the PGA Championship. So it's run by the PGA of America, which runs the PGA Championship. And so we have a process that we have a qualifier for that. Which kind of happens at the end of the year. So like in September-ish, we have what's called our section championship. And if you finish like in the top 10 there, then you qualify for our national championship. And the top 20 out of that, I think about 312 guys and girls qualify for that tournament. They take the top 20 low scores, and you're in the PGA championship. So I've been fortunate enough to do that 4 times over the last 20 years or so. So it's been, had some great opportunities.
Okay, so you've qualified. And now, I don't know about you, but the next question that comes into my mind because of the woman who lives in my house that I'm related to by marriage, the next question that would come into my mind is, how the heck am I going to afford to go? In this case, you went to Baltusrol, which is in suburban New York. How am I going to afford to go to Baltusrol for a week? Do you just max out everything you have? If you're at a private club, do the members pass the hat? Does the PGA help you defray your living expenses for the week? How do you go about that?
Well, I guess it's a little bit different for everybody in their situation. You know, it's an opportunity, obviously, that's priceless. I mean, so whatever it costs, it costs. But,
right.
You know, everybody who qualifies for the PGA, whether you make the cut or not, gets a small amount. So if you miss the cut, you get a small amount. If you make the cut, you get a better amount. So some of the costs are defrayed a little bit, and you know if you can find a reasonable way to get up there, so the transportation's not too much. So like I was fortunate enough at Baltusrol to have one of our members fly me up in his private plane, so which was pretty awesome.
You think?
And one. Yeah, pretty awesome.
I tell everyone, once you do that one time, you will spend the rest of your life trying to get back in one of those.
Oh, yeah, the convenience factor is very nice. and so, you know, then you're responsible for finding a place to stay. But overall, you know, it's not a huge expense. And like I said, it's, you know, obviously an opportunity that you just can't pass up.
Class A PGA professional Kelly Mitchum from Pinehurst Golf Academy is our guest taking Dead Aim. One thing that I know about all teaching professionals, y'all can all golf your golf ball. Most of you had incredible amateur careers and even pro careers. And in fact, we'll touch on your amateur career in a minute, which was really, really impressive. And apparently you're playing in the middle of the street right now.
I'm at the golf course. We've got some maintenance vehicles go by every once in a while. So I apologize.
No problem.
I am trying to work.
Just trying to make sure you weren't about to get run over. But when and how do you find time to work on your game? Because as teaching professionals, your time is taken up helping other people work on their game. And I know you have to get your game in some semblance of shape to be top 20 out of 320.
Yeah, so I am certainly not playing all the time and practicing all the time. And so, you know, I've just had to learn how to, you know, in between lessons or in between classes, get a little bit of practice in. And, you know, so I really would tell people that I'm able to stay loose, but I'm not out there practicing hours a day. I just don't have the time to do that anymore.
So did you just catch lightning in a bottle four times or?
What I tell people is I've played enough over the years and I've worked hard enough on my game over the years that, I know what I'm trying to do. And if I find a nice simple swing thought or feeling and I know how to get the ball in the hole. So, it's just a matter of staying loose. I might spend a little bit more time if I'm heading into a big event, just sharpening up on my short game, just getting the touch and the feel there. But, my swing is what it is. I've put a lot of time and effort into it over the years when I was trying to play full time or in amateur golf. And so, it's still, the game is the game. You just got to get the ball in the hole and that doesn't change. So I know how to do that. And if I can get a simple thought going and then I just, play the best I can and let the shots add up as they do.
Y'all, I find Kelly's aw shucks attitude really charming, but let me go through some credentials here. We're talking to a four-time All-American at NC State, won the 1991 ACC Championship, was a U.S. amateur semifinalist in 92 and won the North-South Amateur in 93. So when he talks about, well, I can find a way to get in the hole, he found a way to get it in the hole a lot over the years. Kelly Mitchum is a teaching professional. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. He has competed in the PGA Championship four times. We mentioned 05 was your first one at Baltusrol. What are your memories of that event and participating for the first time?
Oh, I'd say a couple. One, it was really hot. Now, I remember I had a 2 o'clock tee time on Thursday, and I was totally drenched by my after my practice session before I headed to the first tee. So that is certainly one memory. And I was pretty nervous too, playing in. I played in a U.S. Open in 1995, and so I had played in one major before that. But still, you know, representing the PGA of America and you know. You know, being in your first PGA, I was pretty nervous as well, as to be expected. But the golf course didn't suit my game great, so I didn't play particularly well. So it was bittersweet, I guess.
Kelly, even though you are a PGA professional, you're not a PGA Tour pro. When you go to the PGA Championship, do you feel like an outsider? Are you treated like an outsider?
Of all the events I've played in out there, and I've been fortunate enough to qualify for a fair number of also tour events, there are only maybe one or two times where I felt a little bit like that, but for the most part, not at all. I mean, most of the guys out there couldn't be just, I mean, they're super nice to me. And you know, playing amateur golf against some of them, you know, like the Justin Leonards and the Stuart Sinks and those guys, you know, it's good to catch back up with them because, you know, I don't see them very often. So for the most part, I've gotten treated extremely, extremely well. I actually made the cut in the Heritage 1 year and got paired with John Daly. And I'm talking about he could not have been nicer to me. And, you know, it was almost like I was playing fairly well and he was almost feeling like he was rooting for me. I've had great experiences, very few negative ones.
Okay, so you sweat through three or four shirts in a day at Baltusrol. The next year, you qualify again, 06. You're at Medina, suburban Chicago, legendary golf course. Your memories of that event. Tremendous clubhouse, by the way, at Medina.
It is a beautiful spot. You know, that was probably my best chance to make a cut of the four that I played in because I had I chipped in on 17 and on the first day. And part 18 to shoot one under in the first round, and so you know going into the second round, I'm like, you know, this is a good chance, and it's a good golf course that fit my game pretty well. Unfortunately, I was not able to back it up with another good round, so I missed the cut. But yeah, that was a beautiful golf course and a good golf course for me, and so a little bit disappointing that I, you know, didn't take advantage of it, but. I had a good shot anyway.
Obviously, with your credentials, you had handled the pressures of golf very well over the years. Was it a different kind of pressure that you put on yourself as you're playing that second round of, instead of just going out and maybe just playing the golf course and doing what you did the first day, you can't get out of the back of your mind of, oh my God, if I can just par here, oh, if I can just make out of this with one under or even par, I can make the cut. Is that always in your head, and is it a different kind of pressure?
Well, I mean, I don't think, you know, you can help not think about it to some degree, but yeah, you have to stay focused on each shot at a time and, you know, just try to commit to what you're trying to do. I mean, maybe the nerves are a little bit more, and I've played in enough situations over the years that you learn how to handle it, to some degree. You're not very many club pros end up making the cut in the PGA, so it's on your mind to try to be one of those that do. And so anyway, I feel like I gave it the best shot I could and at the time, and you know, it just didn't work out.
Class A teaching professional from the Pinehurst Golf Academy and four-time participant in the PGA Championship, Kelly Mitchum, is our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, if you were hot at Baltusrol, the next year, qualified for 3 years in a row, quite an amazing feat. In 07, you're at Southern Hills, and that's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Tulsa, Oklahoma in August is, I think, Dante's fourth concentric circle of hell. It is beyond hot in Tulsa.
It was so hot. So I wasn't able to get into Tulsa until Tuesday. And so got in the morning. By the time I got kind of registered and all that, I ended up teeing off in my practice round about 2 o'clock, and it was like hot as all get out. And so nobody was around the first tee at that point. So I teed off by myself and I played the first four or five holes, and I get around to the fifth green, and there's all these. I'm sorry for the noise. He got maintenance vehicles.
No worries.
So I get around to the fifth hole, and there's grandstands around. Nobody's in the grandstands, and I'm practicing my putting. And out of the tunnel through the grandstands, the caddy comes up to me and goes, "Hey, do you mind if we join you?" The bottom part of the practice tee was near the sixth tee box, and I'm like, no, that's no problem. Not knowing who it was, and so I finished my putting, and I walked through the tunnel, and I'm walking up to the tee, and Ernie Els is on the tee box, and he was asking if he minded if he played with me, and so I got to play the rest of the practice round with Ernie Els. That was pretty cool. He was so nice to me, but it was one hot place, let me tell you.
What is it like to watch that velvet golf swing up close and in person like you were able to do?
Yeah, I mean, it was so smooth.
I mean, as a teaching professional, you just want to bottle that, don't you? Go, God, I just want to teach everyone to do this.
Oh, I wish I could hit this far. I mean, to be able to swing as smooth as he does and move the ball out there as far as he does, that's, a little bit envious. But, yeah, that was pretty cool to be able to play with him. And like I said, he's just, another one of those moments that were just, he was just so nice to me and didn't treat, like you said earlier, certainly didn't treat me like an outsider.
You qualified in 05, 06, and 07, and then took a few years off, it seems, before you qualified again. Did you try to qualify for the PGA and just weren't successful, or did you take some years off?
No, that's correct. I haven't qualified for the National every year. So some of them was I just didn't qualify for, have an opportunity, and then other times I just didn't play well enough. So I had a couple near misses where I finished one or two shots back of the top 20, and so didn't qualify for it. But then last time I played was in 2012 down at Kiowa.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because if there's a golf course that I think that if you aren't on a good spot with the man upstairs and you have to go south when you die, I think that when you do that and you're a golfer, your hell is Kiowa in a 20-mile-an-hour wind that's changing directions constantly. It, to me, that place when the wind is blowing is the hardest golf course I've ever seen in my life and can't imagine imposing that on my worst enemy. Rory McIlroy in 2012 made it look like a pitch and putt. It was absolutely an incredible display of golf. How did you find the tournament? And I know you've played that course a lot over the years, being from here in the Carolinas, but what were your thoughts on Kiowa in 2012?
Yeah, it was a good experience. The golf course, like you said, was unbelievably difficult, probably one of the hardest golf courses I've ever played. And to play it under those conditions, pretty tough. I had a cool experience in that I was able to tee. I had the first tee time. I was the first one to get the ball in the air on Thursday morning, like at 7, whatever time that was. And so the first day, the conditions were relatively reasonable. The wind wasn't up, and it was definitely playable. I think I shot like 76. But then on Friday, the winds came in and they blew all day, and I had like a 12-something tee time, like a 12:30 tee time, and I was teeing off the 10th hole, and I mean, I'm wondering, the wind's dead into us, and I'm wondering if I can even get it to the fairway. And it's kind of I'm playing with. Let's see, I'm trying to remember who I played with. A guy named Marcel Thiem, who was a European tour player, and D.A. Points, who was one on the tour. And so anyway, I had the honors on the first hole, and so I did get it to the fairway, par four. Still had 3 wood left in. Make a long story short, I make bogey, and I still had the honors on the next tee.
Oh man! And one of those days.
The next hole is a par five, dead against the wind. I make a double bogey on the next hole, and I still had the honors on the next tee. That's how hard it was playing, and it was a brutal day. One of the most difficult days I've ever had to play in competition. Just. I'd have a 7-iron that against the wind I couldn't hit it 120 yards, and then had a 4-wood on a par 5 that was going downwind that I hit 290. So it was a test. like probably unlike I've ever seen before. So.
We've already covered your amateur credentials, and you also played professionally on the Canadian Tour, Nike Tour, and other mini tours. So you know what you're doing with the golf ball. So having played that golf course and seen how hard it was, when you see what McIlroy did at the end of the week, do you just sort of look around and go, what course was he playing? Because I didn't see that golf course.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, it was quite a display that when he gets going, he can really get it going no matter how hard it is. You know, he just hits it so far. So, you know, he's hitting different clubs into greens that I'm hitting. So, you know, where I'm hitting my second shot, he could not shoot what he's shooting where if he had to play my drive.
That should have been the game you played. Hey, Rory, you get to play my second shot. Kelly Mitchum is a Class A teaching professional. Pinehurst Golf Academy has competed in 4 PGA championships. Get you out of here with a couple of quick ones here. Outside of the memory of Ernie Els playing with you at Medina, what is your favorite PGA championship memory as a competitor?
My favorite PGA championship memory as a competitor. I mean, probably the chip in I had at Medina. You know, it was televised, and so a lot of people saw it, and it was, you know, it really gave me a chance, I thought, of making the cut. So that probably is one that sticks out at me.
And even though you are a competitor, as we all are who play and love this game, there's a part of you that looks on TV right now and goes, man, it looks cold up there, and it's about 7,500 yards, and that rough looks wet and thick and nasty. I think I'd rather watch this one on TV.
I'm with you. I'm thinking the same thing. That golf course is long, and there's some pretty long force carries, and maybe not too disappointing. I'm sitting this one out.
From the Pinehurst Golf Academy, that's 4-time PGA Championship participant, Class A teaching professional Kelly Mitchum. And up next, we handicap the field as golf journalist Ron Mintz takes dead aim at the 101st PGA Championship presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park, and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Golf journalist Ron Mintz's work has graced the pages of FanSided as well as the Sporting News, among others, and we got a chance to catch up early this week before the tournament began to sort of handicap the field at the 101st PGA Championship.
Ron, the 101st PGA, Bethpage Black, from the looks of it on TV, this thing looks long and green, and the rough looks lush. I'd say if it was about 20 degrees warmer and drier, we'd be looking at a hell of a U.S. Open course, but this is the PGA. Kerry Haig usually sets it up for scoring. I don't see a whole lot of scoring out there.
No, I don't either, and I was watching a segment yesterday with Frank Nobilo, and he's pretty good at breaking down each hole, and the holes he showed, the fairways were 22 yards wide, and it didn't really have a secondary rough. It was just fairway and then rough, and it looked very difficult to me.
Yeah, I heard an interview a couple of times this week with Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and a couple of other people, and it seems the consensus is it may not be U.S. Open of old where it was, you know, sand wedge or some sort of wedge just to hack out, but no one's trying to get out of that rough with anything longer than a 9-iron, 8-iron at the most. They say if you try to do anything else, you're just inviting trouble, and that's U.S. Open.
Yeah, that's exactly what Brooks Koepka said in his presser, that a 9-iron would probably be the biggest club he could try to get out of there with.
Let's talk about Brooks Koepka. I loved you referenced his press conference. I loved it this week on a couple of different levels. But one was when he pulled the Jack Nicklaus and started breaking down what it takes to win a major championship. And he says, look, it's 150 guys, 80 of them I know I can beat. That leaves you 70 or so. Half of them can't take the pressure. And then I only have to beat 35 guys. And just it was so matter of fact from someone who's won, what, three out of the last seven that you had to pay attention.
Yeah, he said that before, that he thought majors were easier to win than regular tournaments. And he caught a lot of flack for it, but then somebody else pointed out, just like you did, that that's the way Jack approached it.
Exactly. Those words were almost taken from a Jack Nicklaus handbook. I mean, that's exactly the way Jack used to break it down.
I don't know if Brooks considered this, and nothing against PGA professionals, but if you take those 20 out of the equation, which to my knowledge, one's never won, that makes it even less people for him to contend with.
I was having this discussion with somebody the other day about Brooks Koepka, and I mean, granted, we're really speculating down the line here, but what if we're talking about a guy who has 12 career wins and 8 of them are majors? What do you say about that guy's career at that point? If we truly define everything by majors, you know, you'd have to be blown away. But on the other hand, you only win 4 other times on tour. It just there's an apathy factor there that just is mind blowing with him.
Well, he's made it clear that's what he's going to concentrate on. Of course, Tiger did that a little bit later in his career, but that's what he gets up for. So he'll go in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you can't keep him out. I mean, shoot, he's got 3 right now. You'd be hard-pressed to keep him out of the Hall of Fame right now.
Exactly. He's a different breed. I haven't figured him out yet.
I haven't either, but I like him. And you and I have talked off mic a couple of times in the last week. If you were to stick a gun to my head and say, and I hate the predicting game because you really do just have to let it all play out, but if you were to say, who do I like or who would I anticipate to be there at the end come this Sunday, look, he's there at the end, the major championships, it seems like every time. Until someone takes the trophy away from Brooks Koepka, I say he holds on to it.
Yeah, you talked me into it. I was leaning that way, and after talking to you the other day, it convinced me. And another thing, last week, he'd only seen 9 holes at the Byron Nelson, and he was in contention on Sunday. So the guy, you know, he's even said, I don't have to see a golf course to play it. He said, I've got the yardage, and I know how far I can hit it. And he approaches golf different than anybody I've seen.
Let's talk about some other people who will be in contention at the 101st PGA Championship. Freelance journalist Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. If it's possible for the number one player in the world to come in completely under the radar, that is exactly what Dustin Johnson has done. And this despite having 2 wins under his belt on tour this season, plus a runner-up finish at the season's first major, the Masters.
Yeah, Dustin's always in contention, but somebody pointed out in his presser, he only had 1 major, and I hadn't thought about that. Maybe he will feel the pressure from Brooks having 3 already. But, you know, Dustin's come close several times, and I think a couple times he actually got cheated out of the major with those rulings. But you can't look back and say, woulda, shoulda, coulda. So, but he's definitely a threat, and his game's well-suited. I mean, he hits it straight in the fairway. The only thing I worry about DJ, he has problems keeping the driver in the bag, and he's going to need to leave that driver in the bag on a lot of these holes out there.
Well, see, that's what
that's
what I was going to ask you, because it's one of these things everyone has talked about. To win this championship, you have got to find the fairway, and then they go, comma, and you need to hit it long. When he is playing his best golf, that's one of the things that I like most about DJ, and when he won at Oakmont, is he was hitting it a mile with about a 3-yard fade and found the fairway, it seems like, every single time. So if and when he's on his game, the driver is a weapon. You feel like you need to take that out of the hands? Do you think we'll see a lot more 3-woods and a lot longer second shots as a result from the main contenders?
DJ's probably the one that would hit it straighter than anybody with a driver. I mean, he has so much confidence for that. He gets up and he doesn't take any time. I don't know. I do know that Koepka has a new, I don't know if it's a new driver or a new swing. He calls it his fairway saver, and he hits a low cut with a slight cut. And he says that's enabled him to keep it in the fairway there this week in practice rounds. So he's concerned about the driver. I don't know if DJ is or not, but I've just seen courses and tournaments where he should have left the driver in the bag. He didn't need to hit driver, and he just couldn't resist, and he ended up in trouble.
One of the best drivers of the golf ball, at least visually to me, is Rory McIlroy. He is, unlike the other guys that we've mentioned, Rory hits an extremely high golf ball. The others have more of a lower, boring ball flight, and Rory carries the ball a long way with these fairways still being somewhat soft from all the rain they've received on them. How do you like Rory's chances this week?
I like him very good because they're calling for possibly bad weather on the weekend, but Kerry Hegg from the PGA America said that they normally, this time of year, get about 10 to 15 miles an hour of wind all the time. And so there'll be some wind there, and it does affect the ball. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it does. And one other thing Kerry Hegg said is this course is going to play harder in May than it would have in August due to the fact that the grasses are higher, they're in better shape. When the PGA's always been played in the summer, it's always been dried like concrete no matter where they play, and they roll out concrete greens. But and plus Beth Page hasn't had that many rounds played yet this year. You know, they play 60,000 rounds there a year, and the course is immaculate shape. It's just a totally different golf course than we've seen at a PGA before. So it may be tougher. They're not going to get as much distance. They're not going to roll out as much. The greens may be in better shape. But as everyone in the presser this week has said, including Rory, it's not the greens they're worried about. It's getting to the green. That's going to be the difficult part.
Yeah,
the greens are really relatively small, and they're not difficult. The pins traditionally are set up in the flat parts of the greens, even though they do have a little bit of slope. They're small, but the hard part is just getting to the green.
The other thing that keeps Rory sort of in my mind as a major contender this week is the fact that they have had so much rain. And if there's one guy that you can point to that has success on sloppy tracks over the years, it's Rory McIlroy. His win at Congressional in the U.S. Open was practically underwater. His PGA Championship win at Valhalla a few years ago, that track was almost completely underwater, it seemed like. So the sloppier the track, the less the ball tends to roll out. He seems to excel at those sorts of setups.
He does. And I remember last year, one presser, I can't remember which tournament it was, they were predicting bad weather, and he smiled. I mean, a big smile. And he said, "I love it." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I love playing bad weather." He said, "It's my advantage. I grew up playing in bad weather. And over in Ireland, Europe." So I've always predicted him when the weather forecast was bad. He thrives in it, and he's used to it. One thing, in looking back at the history of Beth Page, you know, Lucas Glover won the U.S. Open there in 2009, but it was what they call a slop fest. The course was just underwater. And he won by hitting three iron off every tee and then five or six iron into the green. So, you know, who knows if they do get bad weather, it'll certainly change the course completely.
Freelance journalist Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. We're sort of handicapping the field for the 101st PGA Championship at Bethpage Black. We've talked about Dustin. We've talked about Brooks. We've talked about Rory. Before we deal with the big cat in the room, the Masters champion, is there anyone else who you kind of have on your radar screen?
I have Francesco Molinari.
You have to. You have to.
Yeah. Nobody's talking about him, and they never do. But he hits the ball straight. He's a machine right now. And I like him a lot. I mean, his game, he doesn't have a flaw in it. And so I think the course is perfect for him. And I look for him to be there on Sunday. I'm not saying he'll win, but he'll definitely be in contention, I think.
Seems that's where he's been a lot recently. All right, let's deal with the Masters champion. Last time we saw Tiger Woods, he was hoisting his hands in the air and he was putting on a green jacket that they got out of the locker room. Seems to be supremely confident for someone who hasn't put a peg in the ground competitively since the Masters, although he put in a lot of work at Bethpage on site last week and the first part of this week. I almost hate to at this point bet against Tiger Woods. I'm going to, for the simple fact that I think he needs competitive reps. I don't think you can just come out of the car, so to speak, and step on Bethpage Black and beat guys who are in competitive shape. Your thoughts on the Masters champion getting the second major of the year?
I agree for two or three reasons. Still don't believe that he's got his driver under control. Now, he's very good off the tee with an iron, but that's going to put him at a disadvantage on some holes. Plus, he can't hit it out of the rough the way he used to. You know, Tiger could get out of rough of any kind, and it looked like he was killing a snake when he did it, but he can't swing that way anymore. And he said that in his presser this week. He said, I can't do that anymore without risking injury. And he's dialed his swing back. I think he said he's only really swinging at about 80-85%. So with those two things in mind, I think the course is too tough for him. And he's 43 years old, and he realizes his limitations. Now, I think you and I may have had this conversation about the Masters. I believe he outsmarted everyone. I don't know if he outplayed them as much as he knew the course and he had better course management at Augusta. I don't think you can do that at Bethpage. It's pretty simple. It's right there in front of you. There aren't a lot of idiosyncrasies like there are at Augusta National.
Yeah, so no, there's two major championship venues that I think you can win by outsmarting people and win with guile. You mentioned one, Augusta National, which is why everyone says, you know, if Tiger was going to win another major, his best shot was there, limited field, and plus you can win that way. The other is the old course at St. Andrews. I think you can win there by outsmarting people and knowing the course. But other than that, I think, you know, it's like you said, look, this is a monster ballpark. This is 7,500 yards playing to a par 70 or par 71, and you know it's huge, and it's going to play even longer, and no one gets longer as they get older. And I'm with you on this. I hadn't even thought about him not being able to hack it out of the rough like he used to, but yeah, he used to just savagely be able to get the ball out of anything, and if he does that now, his career's over with.
I will tell you one bit of trivia. You may have read this. Woods won the 2002 U.S. Open at Bethpage Black after he won the Masters the same year. So we've got the same scenario this year, although it was a U.S. Open, but he did win at Bethpage after he won the Masters. But that's, you know, that's a long time ago, back in his 20s. So time's caught up with him, I'm afraid, to do that again.
Get you out of here on this. Freelance journalist Ron Mintz is our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, we've named 4, 5, 6 people. Give me your top three in no particular order. I'm not going to tell you to give me the winner, but who are your top three?
Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, and Francesco Molinari.
Look, as my friend Peter Kessler will admonish me for doing, it's ridiculous to speculate who will and who won't win, but hey, it's fun, so why not? That's golf journalist Ron Mintz. I'd also like to thank 4-time PGA participant and Class A teaching pro at Pinehurst Golf Academy, Kelly Mitchum, and Ron Green Jr. from the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Hey, congratulations are in order for a guest on last week's show. Coach Andrew DiBattista and his North Carolina Tar Heels have advanced from the Stanford Regional to the NCAA Championships in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We hope to have him back on next week to talk about that achievement and also speak with the aforementioned golf historian Peter Kessler to get his thoughts on what will have transpired at Bethpage Black. Weather-wise, perfect spring weekend in the Carolinas to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And hey, if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.